This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio. You are listening to the Forza Italian Football Podcast on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Hello, hello, and I've messed that up 2 weeks in a row now. 2 weeks in a row. Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest Forza Italian Football Podcast. I'm sure you guys viewing on YouTube will forgive me because it has been quite a weekend, quite a Sunday evening, and quite an end to that Sunday evening with the Derby della Madonnina. I'm Connor Clancy, as always, your usual host, and I've got my two friends back with me this week. Kev, you've made it back from France just in time. Welcome.
I have, Connor. Thank you.
And also joining me is the returning Vito Doria. Vito, we missed you last week.
Yes, I missed that on the pod last week, but I thought I'd do a bit of a Nick Carroll joining the live feed for a bit while I was away. But it's great to be back, and especially after a great round of football.
Yeah, well, it was nice to see you pop up in the comments. Sorry for dwelling too much on results that weren't exactly favourable for your team, but I think it was worth it last week. Guys, actually, Kev, I'm just looking at you now, and a tweet that Dov Schiavone sent to myself and Alistair McKenzie has come to mind. Are you trying to fit in at FIF by growing a beard?
Oh, yeah, of course that's what it is. It's not laziness at all, or the wife being away.
The truth always comes out, Kev. I'm sure she's an avid listener to the podcast, so she will know before she sees you next. All right, before I get distracted again, the only place to start this week is obviously with the Milan derby, where the cliche was proven true. Form goes out the window. Milan came into this as the strong favourites. They were sitting third. They were the dominant team. Paqueta and Piontek were supposed to destroy Inter, but Inter destroyed Milan. Vito, the Nerazzurri did it, 3-2. How?
I thought the way they played was very good. And what I noticed in particular was that they would be rather quick in their ball movement, and they were moving the ball directly as well. I don't think they gave Milan much space to create play, and Milan looked rather sluggish, to be honest. Inter just went for goal, you know, from the first whistle. And for the majority of the match, they really looked like the better side with better attacking intent. And I felt that they found each other much better than the Rossoneri did.
Yeah, well, there were times during this where Inter weren't only playing their best football of the season, but arguably their best football that they've shown under Spalletti. They were really, really impressive. And I know it finished 3-2, but Inter probably could have won by more. There was some controversy about the penalty decision, which Dov said in his post-match video, and I completely agree. I don't really understand where the controversy was, because there was a trip. Penalty was given. So it stood. Vito, did you see any issues with this?
No, not at all. I think it's just exaggeration on some fans' part. Perhaps it's just the Rossoneri fans being a bit disappointed that they conceded the penalty in the manner that they did. But I thought Castillejo tripped Politano and was more than fair to give the penalty.
Kev, Mauro Icardi wasn't there, but you wouldn't have known it. Inter didn't need him.
No, and I think maybe that's what brought out that performance from them. You know, they've been struggling of late, but Martinez looks to be feeling a bit of a void up top, and you just wonder it was the time for them to show that they can live without him.
It really was, because it's been such a circus there lately, and it's all Icardi's doing, the reason that it is a circus. And one of the many pre-match features we had go up was from Tom Probert, I think, wrote this one, looking at a tale of two captains, or in Inter's case, their ex-captain, and how the contrasting forms of Alessio Romagnoli and the situation surrounding Icardi could have shaped this game. It didn't. And a large part of that is because of Lautaro Martinez, Vito. And what strikes me every time I see Lautaro is more than his ability as a player, because he is lacking in some elements, but he just seems so intelligent, so clever, and he's still just starting in European football, but he looks like he could go a really long way.
He looks like he has that all-round presence, whereas Icardi is more your traditional poacher. Now, I thought Martinez is grown in confidence, especially becoming a starter, and he's not always going to be performing week in, week out at this stage of his career. To take the penalty like he did shows that he's got great confidence in himself. And just this overall play, I think it helps Inter to be more fluid, and there's more collective work as well. Whereas when Icardi was around, the team was more or less built around him and his finishing ability.
It might be too easy, Kev, to get carried away with this win, because Inter's form lately hasn't been good. It is easy to forget that in light of such a good performance and with all the emotion that surrounds this particular fixture. But I don't know. There's just something about Inter without Icardi, isn't there? They're not limited to that number nine who scores goals and doesn't do too much else. I know his game has improved in recent seasons, but he is there to score goals. Lautaro, as Vito pointed out, does a lot more.
No, I think what we've said in previous weeks about Inter lacking many individuals that you'd maybe take in other top European sides, and Icardi would be the one, or certainly one of the few, whereas without him, they're kind of starting to develop that sort of team, cohesive sort of unit, just sort of chipping away at learning to live without him.
Yeah, we did. Matthias Fassino has been someone who kind of frustrates. For me, even not being an Inter fan, he's frustrating to watch because sometimes he looks very good, but more often than not, he's not very useful and he kind of gets in the way. And I thought it was quite funny after the game, he said that Inter's consistency or inconsistency isn't acceptable, that they need to find a solution to this problem. And I think a lot of that problem will be solved if he himself just found some consistency. What do you think it is about Vecino? It's because it's not even really just him, Kev, is it? It's a lot of those Inter midfielders blow hot and cold so regularly. We've seen João Mário be an outcast to them being a star for 3 weeks to now being on the periphery again. Borja Valero hasn't done it. Brozovic blows hot and cold. Gagliardini blows hot and cold too. So is it systemic?
No, I think that is the brunt of why they aren't good enough, or you know, why other top sides wouldn't take them. It's that inconsistency. The talent's there, but with a lot of players, you know, the talent's there, and actually what makes them top level players is doing it consistently. You know, 3 out of 4 games, or you know, at that level you can afford to have the one sort of off game, but not so many players that sort of have that inconsistency. I think just hasn't helped Inter.
No, for sure. On the other hand then, Let's go to Milan, the red half, I suppose. Bakayoko, right, we'll start with a positive because he was still quite good, Vito. They lost. He got his first goal in Serie A and he impressed.
Yeah, he's a good ball winner, good passer. And I thought probably in the second half he was better because Milan were attacking a bit more, so he could add a bit more to his game. And I was happy that he scored, actually, because he has improved since joining the club, and he pretty much had to carry the Milan midfield today because Paquetá looked out of shape, Kessié wasn't at his best, and then Souza was anonymous in that first half, and he wasn't that much better in the second.
Yeah, you have to be disappointed as a Milan fan, though, if Bakayoko's your best player in the derby.
I see what you mean, but that's also a bit harsh because...
Well, I think it highlights how little the rest of the team is doing attacking-wise.
Yeah, attacking-wise for sure, but derby games do tend to need players like this to kind of grab it by the scruff of the neck. I think he did his job, everyone else let him down. So Souza is one of those. Is anyone even surprised anymore that Souza fails to show up when it really matters?
No.
It's beyond a joke now, isn't it? And there are still these Milan fans you see who defend him till the very, very end. But he is so frustrating. His biggest involvement in the first half was kicking the ball at Kessié, which led to, I think it was the opening goal, right? And Kev, is there any sign that he can improve, or is he always just going to be this player?
No, I think he's always going to be that player. God, I must have wrote a piece on him a good couple of years ago, just after he joined, just saying that that is why Liverpool got rid of him. Because he was there when Coutinho was there. They were similar age, similar types of players. You could argue there's a slightly more quality on Coutinho's side, but he was doing it week after week after week. You would see flashes of brilliance from Suso, which we do see. Take the derby last year or maybe the year before, but it's just too inconsistent again.
It's so annoying because he does have these moments where you think, okay, you clearly have ability. What's the problem? And there was that stat that I dragged up a couple of weeks ago about him being amazing in the first half of the season and then not in the second. And do you think it's a thing about stature? Are Milan just a step above where he should be? If he was at a team who were expected to finish between 7th and 10th, would he be idolised or would he still be inconsistent?
That's a difficult question. Regarding, you know, are Milan a step up from where he should be? I would say Milan now aren't, but if it was the Milan that were consistently challenging for, you know, Milan have this thing about the stature of the club isn't necessarily representative of how they performed in the last few years. So he was exactly the type of player that Milan needed to go for when they signed him. It's now if they're going to, you know, you're going to get regular Champions League competition because you've got these four places for Italian sides. Now maybe should Milan be shopping in a, you know, in a different market?
Yeah, well, when they signed him, they were that team, right, between 6th and 10th. And now they are very much expecting to finish top four every season. So I do think it is probably time to call it a day for him there. Vito, Paqueta and Piontek were bigged up as being the Inter slayers in this derby, but you could be forgiven for forgetting they were even on the pitch.
Paqueta looked very lethargic and he did not look as influential as he could have been. And then Piontek in particular, he looked very closely marked and he was pretty much shut down by Milan Skriniar. So it was only when Milan started to attack towards the end of the game where Piontek might have had a sniff at goal. And then he had this great chance when he stuck out a leg and he side-footed the ball with the outside of his boot, and it would have been a wonder goal if it went in. Other than that, he just was denied space that he actually manages to find.
Yeah, is it harsh to criticise Piontek, given that it is Suso's job to feed him and Çalhanoğlu's job to feed him, and he did have De Vrij and Skriniar marking him quite closely. So should we be giving credit to those two and pointing the blame at Suso and Çalhanoğlu? Or
absolutely.
You think?
Absolutely. Players like Suso and Çalhanoğlu are holding Milan back from where they should be. And also, when you do compare them to what Milan had in the past, then, of course, those guys would not really make the grade. Skriniar and De Vrij, the top defenders in their own right. De Vrij probably has had some issues adapting at Inter, or he's not performing as consistently as he did at Lazio, but he can still defend. He's still a top defender. More than anything with Piontek, he is a striker first and foremost. He is one of those guys that can be in the right place at the right time, but at the end of the day, strikers, doesn't matter if they're mobile or not, they need the proper service. And Suso and Çalhanoğlu let Piontek down more than Piontek had let himself down.
Kev, before we get onto the big juicy drama to emerge from this derby, a question has come in from Filippo Cacamo. He wants to know, what does this win do for Spalletti's job security? Does it nullify the Europa League exit?
I was going to say you hope not. And I don't mean that sort of anti-Spalletti. It's just that the season hasn't really been a roaring success for Inter. And I think if they're serious about challenging for a title, it doesn't look as though Spalletti is going to be able to get it out of this team. If you're going to make significant investment, would you give him that money? And there are some other high-profile options on the table. So I think his future will be up in the air right up until the summer.
I do think people often make the mistake of drastically changing their opinions on individuals based on one game, right? And I think derby wins can happen. They're exciting, but I don't think people should be getting excited about Spalletti as a result of that, because the sample size of Spalletti performances at Inter is big enough now to say we know what he does. And this derby performance is probably the exception that proves the rule rather than being the rule itself. But let's get on to the juicy beef, shall we? Frank Kessié and Lucas Biglia were going at it on the bench, guys. There was a just after Kessié came off for Andrea Conti, there was a camera shot that went to the bench and showed Kessié fuming, being held back by four teammates. And let's be honest, it would take four to stop him. And it was unclear at first what or who his anger was being directed at. It became clear that it was Lucas Biglia sitting in front of him, beside Diego Laxalt. And then halfway through it, Biglia turned and said something else. Laxalt kind of told him off, and Mattia Caldara leaned over and had a go as well. So Biglia has obviously said something pretty bad here. I know after the game, the official line is that Biglia told Kessié to be more professional or to show some respect because it was disrespectful to Conte and to his teammates. But then Gattuso came out and said that he would allow the two players to explain the situation, and that if he had heard what Biglia said, he would have intervened himself. So do you reckon there's something more to this, Kevin? Maybe the truth of what was said is going to come out in the next couple of days, because if Biglia just said you need to show respect, I'm not so sure Kessié would have reacted quite as angrily as he did.
No, and we've also got to remember that things can get lost in translation when if that isn't your first language, whatever the language was spoken in. I think this the club's got to err on the side of caution really until they get in the heat of the moment after. People will not always give the full story of what went on until they sit the two lads down together. So it's hard to comment at this stage, isn't it?
It is. But Vito, do you think this suggests that, I don't know, I don't want to say it, but maybe all isn't quite well at Milan if the players are going to go to war like this on the bench in their biggest game of the season?
I'm sure that the emotions of the occasion probably got to the two players. So when there's so much drama, adrenaline, and there's a lot on the line, then perhaps people, not just footballers, just get carried away with things. So until we know what the full dialogue was or the majority of it was, it's very hard to assess it. I'd like to think that it eventually be water under the bridge, but yeah, sometimes it also reflects on the pitch, and you don't want to lose a derby. It's probably the game that, out of all games, you do not want to lose at all. It doesn't matter if you're playing the Milan derby or any other one.
We've been asked in the live stream, why are you doing a live stream at 30 minutes past midnight? Well, two of us aren't. I'm doing a live stream at 30 minutes past 1 a.m. And Vito, what time is it where you are?
11:30 Monday morning.
There you go. So the simple answer is we aren't. The more difficult answer is this is the easiest time to get us all together. And we're completely committed to the FIF pod,
It's a
obviously.
worldwide podcast.
It is a worldwide podcast. I've just seen our friends at Milan Weekly Pod have just shared the podcast as a must listen with a link to the live recording. So sorry for all of the disappointed Milan fans that are coming to us right now, but I don't think we were too harsh on them, were we?
No.
I
No,
think we just had to tell it as it was.
I think so. I think so. We'll end the derby chat then with the first comment that came in, which was Milan is black and blue. Sorry, Rossoneri fans, but this evening it well and truly is. Where should we go next? The big game that no one really cared about, I guess. Kev, Genoa brought an end to Juventus's unbeaten run. Their dreams of a second unbeaten season in recent years has come to an end, and no one really cares, do they?
They don't. But also, they seem to have this habit of struggling against Genoa.
It's strange, isn't it? Because Dove was at the game for us. Hashtag FA up the games, obviously, and he was saying in his post match video that this is the first time Genoa have gone unbeaten in a season against Juve since, and then it was just 2011-12, which is quite recent for one of Italy's smaller teams to one of the bigger teams. But it was big Goran Pandev and the unwanted castaway Sturaro who got the goals. Who would have seen this coming?
Yeah, and I saw some sort of a Juventus apologists saying about the Allegri changing the team around. But I thought, when I actually looked at the team, I thought to myself, no, actually, other than Perrin, which is probably the sort of the one that stands out and probably the one that was in the biggest spotlight because he was going back to Genoa and obviously he is in goal when the goal's conceded, it was a pretty strong Juve side.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't understand it. People just look for any excuse to bash Allegri now because people have decided that they don't like him based on a couple of games throughout the last few years, style of football. And then it all came to a head when they were beaten 2-0 by Atletico in the first leg. And those people quite conveniently slipped away when Juve came back and won 3-0 in the second leg and Allegri made some bold choices. But Vito, is Allegri ever going to win over those people who hate him, or have they just completely made their minds up on him?
Well, I won't say that I hate Allegri, but I'm probably one of those critics myself. But I'm more or less just disappointed in him because he played at Pescara in the 80s and 90s like Gasparini. Gasparini stuck to his principles. And okay, he hasn't got silverware, but, you know, he's got his own style. And I think he's evolving as a coach and he's helping Italian football evolve. Allegri is one of those guys who's been at the right place at the right time, plays a traditional style of football, and I think he's getting carried by the individuals that are there. The great shame is Allegri can set up a team to play attractive football. He did that at Cagliari with a bunch of mediocre footballers, and now with a team of champions, I've personally just been underwhelmed by his record in Europe. People can say he made two finals, but other times, I think he squander it with his own cautious approach and sometimes with his sometimes absurd tactical choices. If he can keep producing what he did in the second leg against Atletico Madrid and finally win a Champions League, I think he can win people over. But he's got to understand that the game has evolved a lot and doing things in the old Italian way, you know, defense first, doing just enough to win games, it won't work in Europe.
What do you think, Kev?
Yeah, very strong words from Vito. I don't know. I think that first time that he had to reinvent Juve after they'd lost Pirlo, Vidal and Pogba, I think he deserves credit for that. They potentially haven't reinforced after losing the likes of experience that has gone out the door with Buffon and Marchisio. But I don't know. I think he just gets bashed because Juve are so strong and people want to sort of do him down a little.
I guess it's natural, isn't it? If Juve slip at all, there's Italy's kind of split in two. There's Juventus fans and not Juventus fans. So everyone on the other side of that divide is just quick to bash him. Once the people that are supposed to be on your side start going your way, it's quite difficult then as well. And I don't know, maybe it just seems more exaggerated because we see these people on Twitter, right? So there's these people from everywhere criticizing Allegri when I'm not sure if it's all that important at times that there's a certain type of Juventus fan hating him.
The only thing you'd say is that his ability could be highlighted by the fact that the Juventus side that he inherited, as more and more of that side leave the club, you know, they don't perform as they used to. They're, dare I say, swashbuckling selves.
If you look at the Champions League final team he had from, what was it, 2015 when they lost to Barcelona?
Yeah.
And the team now, they're completely different sides and he's kept them at that level.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what I think he deserves praise for, because it's, it's one thing being financially strong and walk into a league title, but you have to keep that up. You need to freshen it up, even if ever so slightly, to keep that desire within the squad of players that are sort of have won countless titles now.
However, whatever you feel about the abuse of him, you can't help but feel that his time there has just kind of come to its natural end, right? This summer's there have probably been a couple of opportunities for him to walk away from the job. And however this season ends, if they win the Champions League, perfect for him to walk off into the sunset. And if they don't win the Champions League with Cristiano Ronaldo, maybe it's best for him to leave. So, I know it's hard to speculate. We're still a little early, but it does seem like this is a summer where a lot of the coaches could change in Serie A from Spalletti to Allegri. And what happens next? Where do Juve go? Do they go back to Conte, Vito, or is there someone else who can come in there?
If they don't win the Champions League, then I don't think Conte would be the best option. He was fantastic when he was at Juve first time around, and after two seventh place finishes, I think he did a great job to rejuvenate the club, at least in the locker room and on the pitch. But his European record's not that impressive at all, so I've got some concerns about that. Then the other options in the market, well, there aren't many that are really appealing, or what I would call Juve standard coaches, because they need a coach that can really make them a force in Europe, not to win more Scudetti.
Yeah, for sure. I quite agree. Kevin's in the comments from Trinidad. Wow. I didn't know people listened to us out there. Hello, Kevin. Welcome along. All right, let's move on from this because the derby ate into a lot of time. Spal 2, Roma 1. This was a lot of fun. Going to Ferrara is always fun because the people are quite mad. And this time, the players actually delivered a performance and a result that the fans deserved without sounding too much like a cliche or a broken record, but this was a very, very good performance. And Kev, it's not good news for Roma.
No, it serves them right for wearing their away kit.
What's your problem with this?
Spal don't play in red. What's the problem with just wearing your kit? Anyway, no, I don't know. We said the other week about, getting rid of Di Francesco. We don't think is the problem there. I you know when you just the look at the well, you look at the performance. And again, it goes down to quality, but you just wonder if they've got the desire now to actually break into that top four.
You don't
You
think they've
know,
got
well, not necessarily desire, but I don't see any belief in the players when they go behind that they can turn these sort of things around. And I think it goes deeper to them thinking that there is going to be no Champions League football for them next season.
It's this thing with Roma, isn't it? That I'm not sure how important like fight and a willingness to kick people is. But it's often been the problem with them. De Rossi aside, they don't have anyone
But
who
look at the
seems to.
last couple of years. They've never really had to. They've got into a position where they're in the Champions League places, but never had to really break in at the end of the season. So we've never seen if they can actually sort of dig in and do that.
Yeah, they've kind of just been there by default a lot of seasons, more so than.
A bit like Inter this year.
Yeah, absolutely. A bit like Inter and Napoli this year, I guess. But what struck me was this seemed like a game where the coach should be going absolutely mental at them. And look, I think I nearly came close to bashing him last week, but I really love Claudio Ranieri, but he didn't do anything. He
Claudio doesn't do mental.
just stood there. He didn't move. I was watching him because the press box there is pretty much behind the away dugout. And Ranieri, I have a picture from before the game where he's standing in a spot with his arms folded. And I could have recorded a video from the same angle. Everything around him would have moved except for him. The only time he moved from that spot was when he went down to the dressing room at half time. The only thing that changed was he put his hands into his pockets every once in a while. I just thought, if you're not going to shout at them, get your assistant to shout at them because Spal were walking all over them. And if there's one thing that Spal consistently do, it's fight and it's run a lot. and it's try really hard. And I know that's so simplistic and stupid to say almost, but it was so, so true. And Roma just didn't do anything. Spal's best players were Manuel Lazzari, Mohamed Fares, and Yasmin Kurtic. Why? Because they just ran the most, and Roma didn't bother running after them most of the time. Lazzari in particular, we know his quality. He's not in the Italy squad, which maybe this performance came a week too late, but he could probably offer something there, Fido. And this is a big win for Spal.
No, absolutely. They won 3-0 in the initial fixture in the first half of the season in Rome, and that was surprising enough. And then to do it again in the second half of the season is still pretty impressive.
Well, I have a question for you, Vito. Do you know the last time Spal beat Roma twice in a Serie A season?
I'm going to take a wild guess. Would it be the 1950s?
Oh, you've gone too far back. You should have read my match report, mate. It was 1965, 1966, which is quite a long time ago. Quite a long time ago. But they fully deserved it. They really did. And Kev, Andrea Petagna, he did it again. I don't know how he got the penalty, to be honest, because Petagna shouldn't be getting knocked over like that.
But no, it looked a little harsh, to be fair. It was almost just a bit of a coming together. But you know, maybe you should have stayed at Atlanta. They needed some goals.
Well, Big Duvan still has more goals than him this season, so don't get too carried away. But I think what happened there was the Roma penalty seemed quite soft too.
Yeah.
And the referee kind of gave it. And then there was such a long VAR review, a silent VAR review, which always seems to happen in Ferrara. And they hate VAR there because they seem like they think it's against them, because I actually see what they mean. They do seem to be quite harshly done by it, but maybe it's just they're quite a physical team, I guess, right? So more of their decisions tend to go to VAR and whatever. But
the penalty they gave away Saturday was stupid, more than, you know, an over excitable challenge.
It was like, do you think it was even a foul?
Well, I mean, there's no need to put your arm across the player running away from him. Dzeko's got away from him, so he's almost making a half-hearted attempt to sort of nudge him or maybe knock him off balance without being spotted. And you know, and Dzeko's going to play on that. I think any top-level attacker's going to play on that and get it, even with VAR now.
Yeah, can we speak about Dzeko? Because he wasn't very good. His biggest contribution in the first half was falling over when there was absolutely nobody close to him. And nobody seemed to know what happened, including the Spal player that was closest. He seemed a bit shocked.
And it still annoys me that he's capped him.
Why is... Is it just...
You know, he had that horrific show of dissent towards the referee in the Coppa Italia tie. He then had that awful headbutt, if we can even call it that, from Pepe. And when you're talking about Roma maybe showing the desire or the belief that they can come from behind and get this, you know, it's not exactly the icon that you want.
No, I agree. I was going to throw over to Vito, but he's left us. I don't know where he's gone. But
he is?
No, he's back. Vito, Edin Dzeko, is Kev's questioning his captain credentials, which I would agree with questioning. But even just as a striker, he was good in the Champions League in the first half of the season, but he's been underperforming for quite a while there.
Yes, so I think it's probably a reflection of just Roma in general, that I think just the way they play, they don't really play with the same urgency as they would have last season. And Dzeko in general, I think, you know, you've got to consider that he's going to be about 33 this year, so he's probably going to be starting to lose a bit of his edge. And also, if you give him the right service, he can do something. But otherwise, I don't think he's also the ideal captain either. And he would have only got that because of his age and what experience he can bring. I do agree that perhaps, yeah, he's not really a good guy. To say that he can't be trusted would be harsh, but I don't think he is dependable. So as a leader, well, even as a striker now, we can't expect him to hit 20 goals a season like he used to in the past.
Well, from underperforming oldies to overperforming youngies, Nicolò Zaniolo, he came off the bench and within 5 minutes he helped win his team a penalty. And every time he got the ball, I don't know what, there's just something about the way he moves with the ball. He just glides. I'm not comparing him to this player, but the way he dribbles is quite Messi-esque. He's just so good to watch. And you could see that Spal were quite terrified of him. And he injected a little bit of life into Roma. And Vito, if we're going to speak about Zaniolo from an Italy perspective, how important do you think he should be?
I believe that Roberto Mancini's got to integrate him into the national team, but it also depends on the formation too. Mancini uses the 4-3-3 formation, so I think if he uses that, I would use him either in place of Barella or if Verratti, let's say if he's not fit or he just wants to be rested, you could play Zaniolo there. But I think depending if later down the track Italy has good enough strikers, Zaniolo is probably the ideal trequartista for the 4-3-1-2 formation, just to play behind the strikers and provide that link between the midfield and the attack.
Okay, I was going to talk about Patrick Schick as well because he was quite good except for his final product. But we don't really have too much time, to be honest. Lazio 4, Parma 1. This was probably the most straightforward of the games to be played this weekend. It was 4-0 at half time. Lazio were incredible. And Kev, Luis Alberto delivered for them.
Yeah, he did. He's been quiet in recent weeks. Well, alongside Milinkovic-Savic, but he took his goal well. He nearly got a hat trick towards the end. He whistled one just wide. I saw the highlights of this, but I don't know if you saw any more of the game. Were Lazio that good and Parma that bad in equal measure? Because they seem to make a lot of mistakes to let Lazio in.
Well, I think I know who you're referring to by that.
Oh, well, yeah, the goalkeeper was particularly poor.
Thank you. Because usually when Luis Giuseppe does things badly, it's me that has to raise it. But this is him, isn't it? He pulls off incredible saves. I still think he's one of the better shot stoppers, but in terms of whatever goes on through his head just during a game, I don't really know because he does some inexplicable things that if a 12-year-old goalkeeper did, you would question. He's quite bizarre. I don't really understand him. But Vito, were you all that impressed by Lazio's overall performance?
I do believe that Lazio deserve credit for the performance, and I thought there was some good build-up play for the goals and some well-taken shots as well. So Parma themselves, they didn't really have many chances to score. So to say that it was a case of Sepe playing badly, I think it would do a little bit of disservice to the Biancocelesti. That being said, I reckon the first two goals should have been stopped better because the Marasic strike went between his legs. And that penalty, that's probably the one that really stuns me. Usually, if a player goes down the middle, usually it'd be easy to stop. But for
He
some reason,
dives over it.
penalty, it just went right under him. It's unbelievable.
There was quite a nice picture I saw of the moment that passes underneath him, and you can just see his face because he knows what's happening, and it's quite nicely captured. But sorry, Lazio, this is probably not a good week to go short on you guys, but we kind of need to. But quickly, they are 6 points off the Champions League now, Kev. Do you think they can do it?
I think there's going to be a couple of factors. I think they can leapfrog Roma. Those two look like they're crossing over. Lazio seem to be coming into some form and actually showing that belief that they can do it. Like we were saying, Roma didn't have. It depends how the Milan derby now affects Milan. I think I can honestly say I'm not sure who's got who after the international break, but they need some time to regroup, I think, and just make sure that they're aware of just how close Lazio are behind them.
Yeah, I was actually quite surprised when I looked at it, the table to see that Lazio hadn't already overtaken Roma. I just assumed that with the recent derby and what happened this weekend, if that was it, they were ahead of them there. But it does kind of show how much of a little dip they suffered this season. They've lost 8 games, which is actually quite a lot, to be fair. But let's move on. Sorry, Lazio fans. Vito, you're about to be very, very happy. Sassuolo and Sampdoria played out a stunning 5-3, which Samp came out on top of. And there were 8 different goal scorers. But we're going to focus on one of them. Because I tweeted when this guy scored. I said, guys, forget about the derby. Let's do a Fabio Quagliarella pod special. So this is his little window. Vito, sing about how much you love Fabio Quagliarella.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Quagliarella, he's got 21 goals for the season, so he's already bettering his personal best of 19 from last season. And it's the first time in his senior career that he's scored over 20 goals for a campaign. So I'm very impressed with that. 7 assists, so it also shows he's had some contribution with the assists, and he's only 2 assists off Dries Mertens for the campaign, so that's really good. That being said, you know, I think we're just running out of superlatives to describe him because he's 36 years old and he is in the form of his life. Lots of players would be declining, but not him. And he's been picked for the Italian national team for the up-and-coming international break, but some people just look at the number and think, oh, he's too old, we got to look at the kids. I do believe that Mancini's got to integrate most of the youth, but there aren't many good experienced guys there aside from Bonucci and Chiellini. I think Quagliarella might be able to do something for the national team because the Azzurri are short on quality finishing at the moment.
Well, Italy do actually play here in Parma. I think it's on Tuesday against Liechtenstein. And I wasn't going to go, but he might play. So I'm considering going just to see him play for Italy, which I love seeing him play, and he's 36, and he just looks so good. Kev, we were supposed to speak about him last week, but we didn't, and my reason was we've spoken about him a lot. And then he goes this week and scores again and assists. So he's now scored and assisted more than he has in any other season in his career. He's 36 years old.
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to get that output out of him next year. I've said it before, but I kind of disagree with Vito over the inclusion in the Italian national side. If this was a season where you've got a World Cup or European Championships at the end of it, I could see why you take him to a tournament. On this form, you cannot sort of discount him as being part of the squad, even a starter. But, you know, a moment ago, we were talking about Zaniolo being the future of the Italian national side and sort of bedding him in. We can't have one and, well, you know, do you have one or the other? I can even see the from the aspect of the experience he'd give the strikers, but there aren't many really, really young strikers in the squad, are there? I suppose
Moise Keane's in that team.
Yeah, I suppose you do get that experience all round as well, but you know, I just wouldn't take him again. You know, like you say, it's Liechtenstein.
But is he just being played to acknowledge his good form? It is who it is that they're against. Give him a game and then.
But is that what international football is? Is that what competitive football should be?
Is it competitive football when you're playing Liechtenstein?
Well, it is technically.
Yeah, technically, but Everyone qualifies for the European Championship. So is it?
It's an easy cap.
I think he deserves it, though. It's more than just a gesture. The guy's Serie A's top goal scorer. So, no, why not?
His form does warrant inclusion. But Italy are coming off the back of not qualifying for a World Cup.
Yeah.
So they have to be looking to the future.
But they didn't qualify for a World Cup wherein they gave opportunities to the likes of, I don't know, like Belotti and Immobile and stuff. And it's not like there are other strikers who are banging.
That's the main problem.
Mario.
What do we do? Well, look, we both know where we all stand on that. Mario Balotelli should be Italy's number 9, but he probably won't be. So what do they do? People were talking about getting Giovinco back not too long ago. which don't even get me started on Sebastian Giovinco because I'd go off on one. But Quagliarella deserves it. And I get what you're saying, right? Because surely Italy do need to be planning ahead for the Euros, but is the priority now not just making sure they win games now?
Yeah, well, yeah, but and this is also the other problem with this expanded Euros that was expanded, I think, at the last competition. I think 2016 was when they that you've got like a one in two chance to qualify. I think there's now 53, 54 UEFA nations, and there's 24 qualifying places. It's like, you know, if if a country with Italy's history and you know the quality of the national league can't qualify under those conditions, then you know then they may as well pack up and go home.
Well, Lock Yes comes in the comments to say everyone qualifies for the European Championship. My country has never qualified for anything. Daniel Flego says Quagliarella is too old for the national team. I agree and hate you, Daniel. And everyone else is saying that. Yeah, I know. It's just those two guys again saying that they need to think about the future. But you said something about you don't think he can replicate this form again next season, Kev. But we said this last year. And he's outdone himself again.
This
So,
is his best ever return.
yeah, and last season was his best ever return before this. So next
Okay.
year he's going to score 30 goals.
I can't see it. I really can't see it.
Okay,
Be
right.
great if he does, because it'll be before a European Championships, and then he'll go as Italy's number nine.
Well, he might not have to go anywhere because there's going to be games all over the place. So he might just get to play in Rome. That would be fantastic. Okay, where to next? Napoli beat Udinese 4-2, but given Napoli don't really care about Serie A, we don't care about speaking about them this week. Carlo Ancelotti did say, though, that Serie A is good because it keeps us motivated for the Europa League. So Serie A is basically training for Napoli for the next couple of months, which is nice. I might not go to any of
It
their
wasn't
games.
food nazi though.
No, well, it was for 15 minutes when they came from 2-0 down to being 2-2. But let's go to the bottom. Cagliari beat Fiorentina in the weekend's first game. This was a huge result at the time, because it looked like it was a big step towards safety, but then kind of everyone won down there, so it wasn't as big as it first seemed. But let's speak about Fiorentina. Kev, there are problems there, and they don't look like they can just be scratched away by Pioli reshuffling things.
No, I saw some fairly staunch Fiorentina followers on Twitter actually finally saying that Pioli's time is probably up, and there's been this hangover from the Astori tragedy that I think has given him a little bit more time. And when I actually sort of watched the game on Friday night, I sort of saw how poorly they were defending him. Now, I wondered whether they're missing, you know, the effect of Astori's absence. Tragic absence is where the problem lies. I was hoping to get back in time to actually run some of the numbers as to what they conceded since he passed, because they just look very flaky at the back.
Do you
You
mean
know,
his on pitch, like
yeah, they just
literally
seem
as
to
a
have a bit of
footballer?
a soft centre in defence, and it's whether his organisational skills and things are just missing. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't remember anybody coming in to really rectify that in the summer.
No, well, Vitor Hugo took his place, right? Because he scored the first goal after the death, and he had the number 31, which is obviously 13 reversed, and it was quite poignant like that, but I don't think they did sign anyone. But whenever I've seen Fiorentina, the problem hasn't been that. I've always thought defensively they look quite good with Lafont behind the defensive pairing. And for me, it's in midfield that their issues are. And it's kind of terrifying how reliant they are on someone like Jordan Veretout, because he's not a world beater, but Vito, he's so key for them.
He has been a key player for them, and he's not exactly world class, but he is a good contributor for them. And compared to the other midfielders around, I think they make him look a lot better than what he really is. I've said on quite a few editions of the podcast that the midfield has been the weak link, and I reckon for next season, regardless if it's with Pioli or not, that is the part of the pitch that needs restructuring the most, because aside from his goals, Marco Bernassi does not do enough. He isn't really a good enough ball winner in the midfield. And, okay, Vertu, he has his moments and he can create something, but they need someone who's going to be more inventive or just possess more technique, because I do believe they got a good enough forward line, especially with the good patch Lewis Muriel had until the last couple of weeks. And Chiesa is one of the brightest young talents in Italian world football. And Simeone might not be having a good season, but he has shown that he's got the work ethic and he can contribute with a few goals. So I think with them, they just need to be better supplied.
Well, yeah, well, look, Veretout didn't play. Bernassi, don't get me started on Bernassi and what he's doing at Fiorentina. I really, really don't know. But look, let's move on quickly. Torino surprisingly lost, and even more surprisingly, conceded three times against Bologna. Kev, Bologna are now just 1 point off safety down there. Empoli and Udinese have slipped down to 16th and 17th, both on 25 points. Bologna on 24. Do you expect one of those two teams to fall into the bottom three soon?
Well, I really felt for Bologna this weekend because Mihailovic said he was going to get him out before the international break. And then I saw the rest of the... I sort of kind of saw the connotations of all the other results. You know, Empoli beat Frosinone, which was kind of expected. But Cagliari turned over Fiorentina. And you thought it really wasn't helpful for Bologna's cause this weekend. So it was crucial they got that win against Torino.
Yeah, well, Empoli were always going to beat Frosinone, I guess, right? But is it Udinese? Are they the team? Because there's always one team, right, that kind of just slips and slips and you don't really notice them. And then, oh my God, they are in big trouble.
I think, they're the obvious candidates of how the games went this weekend. The one thing I will say about them is they always look like they can score a goal that might scrape them a draw or a win. Whereas Empoli, before the last couple of weeks, looked like they were the ones that were going to sort of start plummeting.
You do look at it, and Spal are a better team than their position says, I think. But then they could easily be 11th or something. Swap places with Parma, and I don't think many people would really notice that much. But Bologna are... I don't know what Bologna are. Under Mihailovic, they're better than 18th, I think. Right? They've won their last two games now, and I think Udinese and Empoli need to really, really start watching out. And Sassuolo are sitting there, and I'm looking at them. They're in 13th place. At the moment, they are, 8 points off the drop? But they've been terrible since about September. They're 2 points ahead of Cagliari, and then there's a bit of a gap between them and Spal, but you wouldn't be too surprised. Maybe for them not to get relegated, but for them to be involved in the conversation before the end of the season.
Yeah, I think it's just a shame that there's only one place to play for. I think if it hadn't been for those really, you know, Frosinone and Chievo being so poor, we could have arguably a more exciting relegation battle than we're going to have for the Champions League places.
I think it's going to be quite interesting, whatever happens. Lucky S asked us to do a preview for the Italy game like during the week and then deleted the comment. So he's obviously changed his mind. We must have said something to annoy him. But sorry. Anyway, where shall we go? What's left? Oh, that's kind of it. Atalanta couldn't beat Chievo, which Atalanta just decided to put on a display of their early season selves. Dominate the game, but not really be able to break through. Sorrentino made a couple of decent saves, but nothing too extreme. And this is just one of those results that Atalanta are always likely to, I was going to say pull off, but always likely to succumb to, because if they could just take care of these teams like they should have against Cagliari, like they should have when they were 2-0 up against Empoli, then they would be fifth place knocking on the top four, but they're seventh, level on points with Lazio, and also 6 points off the Champions League. And you do think the Coppa Italia is probably their best way into Europe because they're just too likely to drop points.
That's you conceding that their Champions League hopes are over.
I'm not conceding they're over. I think it's very, very unlikely for them to overturn 6 points and for the three teams between them to fall beneath them. But I still think it's possible. It is possible. It will be possible until the last game of the season and it's mathematically ruled out, Vito. I don't know why I blamed you for that. I'm sorry. And then, like you said, Kev, Empoli did beat Frosinone 2-1. And that's that. We've done it.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
All around done.
We will have audio coming from Dov Schiavone at the San Siro, where he was there in the actual stadium at the actual game.
I saw him rush through his 30-second Instagram roundup, and if anybody is on Instagram, go and find it because it's hilarious. Him trying to squeeze in five goal scorers. It just tickled me this afternoon.
Well,
or this evening.
I thought he'd be distracted by a cat.
For anyone that hasn't listened to Duff on the podcast this season, they won't get that. But I kind of thought that too, Vito, to be honest. But what was I going to say? Yeah, do head over to Forza Italian Football on Instagram and watch not only Dov's video, but my video and Alistair's video and Vieri's previous videos from the stadiums where we just wrap things up nicely and quickly. I managed to say Ferrara twice in my video this week, which was particularly pleasing when you're trying to squeeze as much as possible in and you double up on the city you're standing in. But it was fantastic. But the Dov thing, right? There were five goals today. And I remember when we started doing these quick roundup videos, the first game it happened for was me at the Artemio Franchi for Fiorentina 3, Sampdoria 3. And that was mad, that game. And I had like said, we'll do them another 30 seconds, blah, blah, blah. And then that game happened, and I think my video went on for about 45 seconds. And the boss was like, you need to cut that down under 30 seconds. And then when I saw his video published, I was like, right, I'm timing this. And you could just see him. He obviously had the goal scorers written down because his eyes kept glancing over. But he did well. He nearly tripped himself up a couple of times, but he got through. Credit to the big man. He was still actually at San Siro, I believe, wrapping things up at 10 past 2 in the morning.
Or he's in the bar.
No, the bar is closer to his house, so if he made it that far, he would have just gone home. And I need to speak to him on Skype after we finish this, so he better not be in the bar. It's going to be a late one, guys, so I'm probably not going to be in bed until 5-ish, which is fantastic. But Kev, thank you for joining us fresh off the boat.
My pleasure.
Vito, thank you for joining us.
No, he's glad to be back.
And as I've said, head over to Forza Italian Football on Instagram. On Twitter, we're at Serie A FFC, and then we're back to normal on Facebook at Forza Italian Football, where we have all the games covered. We'll have the Italian games covered in some capacity. Dov's coming down to Parma to join me. He's going to the Tardini. I think I might be going too. We don't know. So yeah, head over to the website, forzaitalianfootball.com. We won't be doing a podcast next week. Guys, we get a bit of a break. So to all of our lovely listeners, Inter fans will be happy with the outro music. And that's it. We'll speak to you all in 2 weeks. So this is the last time you will hear my voice. You'll be happy to hear for 14 days. So ciao for now.